G'day guys. Now before we dive into today's show, I have a huge announcement to make. Now as you all know, I've been working on my brand new book called Investing in the US, The Ultimate Guide to US Real Estate. And I am super pumped to announce that it is now live on my website. It is live on Amazon. So please jump over to reedgoosens.com/books and grab a copy today. All proceeds from the sale of this book goes to charity. So remember to jump over to reedgoosens.com/books and get your hands on one today. Now back into the show.
Once you have that perfect destination of what success looks like for you in all areas of your life, it's so much easier for you to not only take those first, second, and third steps to achieve it, it also makes you much more resilient when adversity inevitably strikes.
Welcome to Investing in the US, an Aussie's Guide to US Real Estate, a podcast for international investors and real estate entrepreneurs looking to break into the US market.
G'day, g'day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another cracking edition of Investing in the US podcast from Los Angeles. I'm your host, Reed Goosens. Good as always to have you with us on the show. Now, I'm glad that you've all tuned in to learn from my incredible guests, and each and every one of them are the cream of the crop here in the United States when it comes to real estate investing, business investing, and entrepreneurship. Each show, I try and tease out their incredible stories of how they have successfully created their businesses here in the US, how they've created financial freedom, massive amounts of cash flow, and ultimately create extraordinary lives for themselves and their families. Life by design, as I like to say. Hopefully, these guests will inspire all of my cracking listeners, which are you guys, to get off the couch and go and take massive amounts of action. If these guys can do it, so can you. Now, as you know, I'm all about sharing the knowledge with my loyal listeners, which is you guys, and there's absolutely no BS on this show, just straight into the nuts and bolts. Now, if you do like this show, the easiest way to give back is to give us a review on iTunes, and you can follow me on Facebook and Twitter by searching at Reed Goosens. You can find the show wherever you podcast, on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, and Google Play, but you can also find these episodes up on my YouTube channel. So head over to reedgoosens.com, click on the video link, and it will take you to the video recordings of these podcasts where you can see my ugly mug, but the beautiful faces of my guests each and every week. All right, enough out of me. Let's get cracking and into today's show. Today on the show, I have the pleasure of speaking with another cracking Aussie expat making a go of it here in the United States, Mr. James Whittaker. James is the author of Think and Grow Rich, The Legacy, a modern companion to the best-selling self-help book of all time, also named Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill. Now, for this book, James has interviewed over 100 world-leading athletes, entrepreneurs, and business leaders to unlock their secret sauce about how they are successful. I'm really pumped and excited to have him on the show to share his incredible story about how he came to the United States and set up his business and his brand. But enough out of me. Let's get him out here. G'day, James. Welcome to the show. How are you doing today, mate?
Good, Reed. How are you?
Mate, very, very well. I just want to give a little bit of context to the listeners. We actually met a couple of years ago. I remember meeting you. The story I remember from you is that you told me one time that you used to go and have beers watching, the Strongest Man or the CrossFit Games or something like that? Did you used to do that? Was that right?
No, you're spot on. They've since moved it to Madison, Wisconsin now. So they took it away from sunny California. But amazing feats of fitness through the week for all those people.
I just remember, mate, you telling me that you went and had a few beers watching people work out. I thought that was really interesting. First time I'd ever met you, and I thought that's I usually go to the rugby or the cricket or the baseball, but sure, whatever floats your boat.
now that ESPN picked them up, they're doing pretty well worldwide. So it's a pretty amazing sport, just amazingly growing in popularity as well.
100%. But mate, enough about that. Let's dive into the interview. I'm really excited to have you on the show. We've been crossing some paths here in LA. I'm not in LA. I'm in Austin today, but. Do you want to rewind the clock and tell me how you made your first ever dollar as a kid?
Well, it's a good question. I guess the first ever dollar that I made as a kid would be when packaging CD-ROMs and audio cassettes for my father, actually. So he was he had his own books and he was a speaker and had his own business. And he also created what he called the Wealth Creator CD-ROM, the first personal finance CD-ROM that a lot of people or millennials probably don't even know what a CD-ROM actually is. But we would pack that into this kit. So my brother and sister would do that as well. And I guess it was probably good for Dad because he had some cheap child labor right at home.
And your dad was, when was this, would have been going back on the 80s, right? Or early 90s?
Yeah, late 80s for sure. Early 90s, definitely.
And what, he was an entrepreneur? Like, what, like to thinking of today, like everyone does these self-help books and CDs and stuff like that. But back in those days, that would have been pretty cutting edge, right?
Yeah, it was pretty dynamic. It was when animations for CD-ROM, it was just starting to become if you could do that well, to basically... Thinking about the education revolution that we have had on the back of the internet before, when it was just computer programs and different things of that nature, if you had any type of engaging hook that you could use to get people more and more excited about education and about their own development, then that did well. So, yeah, along with that, the audio cassettes were very much around the personal development thing on the back of a book that he had written called Making Money Made Simple that was very very well known back in the 80s.
Wow. And this is all in Aussie, or did it get global?
Yeah, he took that around the world. I think it's it did very well, and it's still one of the best-selling books in South Africa, and it was in England, and it got translated into in China and Singapore and Malaysia, and I assume they did a good job to his to what he wrote. But obviously, he didn't speak any of those languages to be able to check up on it. But it was a really interesting growing up having him as you. Of course, if it's your own dad, it's just your own dad. You don't really think about them in any other way. And
right.
It's only looking back that I actually realized the gift of what it was like having that entrepreneurial thing, because he has gone through everything that I ever go through in life. And we all have our own trials and tribulations, especially when you have your own business and move countries or go down that entrepreneurial route. And he's just great to have as a sounding board, because he's very balanced and just a very positive guy.
That's, mate, it sounds like he's had an incredible influence in your life, and we'll get into what, you know, the achievements that you've done to date, but walk me through that, the period of life. You know, what did you do at uni? How'd you get to the United States, and that journey before we dive into what you're doing today?
Well, I grew up in Brisbane, Australia, and beautiful place, love Australia, an amazing country. And I just felt like I spent 10 years there in financial planning and absolutely loved that. And that got me excited about having people engaged with their personal finance. And it had always been a dream of mine to go and study an MBA over in America. So I actually did I studied at an international business school that was 9 months in Boston in Massachusetts, very cold place in winter, and 3 months in Shanghai, China. And it was during that time in Boston when I started to meet people who were my age, so 28 at that time. And I had always had these entrepreneurial dreams, and I looked at people who were going after everything that they wanted. And it was a pretty interesting, damning realization for me, where I thought, well, what is the difference between me and these people? And it's that they were taking action for their dreams. And I thought I was taking action, but it's only when you really get out of your bubble, you really get out of your comfort zone, like literally on the complete opposite side of the globe, Boston to Brisbane. And it was when I met some really interesting people there, it was when I thought that, you know what, I'm going to start to give this a red hot go myself. And then once that finished, I moved to LA. That would have been in 2013, and have been here ever since.
Nice, mate. Well, and you went to Boston, then Shanghai, then back to Australia, then back to the United States. Was there any reason in particular to come back to the US? Because you'd studied here and you had sort of that little bit of a step up compared to maybe other people?
The only time that I came back to Australia after the MBA program was just for various business interests and to see family. I still haven't technically moved back to Australia. I'm sure one day that will happen. But yeah, I basically packed one suitcase and got rid of everything else and have been slowly acquiring possessions again ever since.
Awesome. And did you have a job when you got here? Like, what were you doing to make money here in the States? Because obviously you are not American from your accent, and what are you doing to make ends meet and be here, I guess, legally? Because we all go through that. You know, I'm Australian, I'm here in the United States, meant to cross that bridge. What did you do?
For sure. Well, of course, anyone living over here, you've got those visa considerations to do. And every time I would talk to an immigration lawyer, they would just say, oh, get married, get married, get married. And I had only been with my girlfriend at the time, now wife, for a couple of years. And that seems to be a long time in America. But for Australians, we seem to do our due diligence a little bit longer than that. A lot of my friends were with their girlfriends for 7, 8, 9 years before they
bought. 7.5 years for me. And
Exhibit A. That's exactly right. And it was so through all that process, so we ended up getting engaged and married, which was great. But I was working at a marketing agency only briefly in LA, but I also had a lot of other things that I was doing myself. So I set up a CrossFit gym back in Australia with two friends of mine. So that was one of the biggest CrossFit gyms in the world. We had a weightlifting club, a social media brand, launched an activewear brand. We had a lot going on. And it was during that time, I realized that I had probably spread myself a little bit thin, but then I had a bit of an opportunity that I had to go for. And that was when I met the filmmakers of people who were making a movie about Think and Grow Rich for the first ever time. And I met with them here in Santa Monica, and they asked me to come on board as author. So to write a modern companion of the best-selling self-help book of all time, and also co-executive producer of the film. So they were all the various things that I was juggling. And so, and then to answer this in a very long-winded way, it was in the last year I realized that life was actually just keeping me over here in the US. So I made the decision to, I just got out of those other business adventures and wish the guys well, and I'm now focusing on I had launched the book and the film and building a speaking career and mastermind programs and online courses and various other things of that nature.
Awesome, mate. And what can I ask a very pointed question? What gives you the authority to write about Think and Grow Rich? Are you a writer? Were you a writer? What? How did that conversation come about? Because I'm sure that doesn't just fall into anyone's lap. Hey, we're making a movie. Do you want to write the sequel to Think and Grow Rich, right?
Yeah, it's a very, very good question. I hope they're happy with their decision. And so to take you right back, when I first went to university, I had always enjoyed writing. I just did it. It wasn't something that I was ever taught. I just did it. And then when I was in a creative writing course at university, at University of Queensland, and the professor, the lecturer, whatever you want to call it, yeah, UQ.
I just studied civil engineering there, man. So, yeah.
Oh, nice. Oh, good. And so the professor said, put up your hand if you want to make money from writing. And of course, everyone's hands went up. And then he said, let me be clear, you'll never make any money from writing. It's basically a labor of love. And you'll need to find either get used to not having any money in your life or doing something else. And I thought, well, I don't want to be homeless. I need to have some money coming in. So that was when I enrolled in a business degree as well. But I continued writing and just loved writing, even though that was just a bit of a, it was at that point, it was where I thought that the writers stuck with it and went hardcore into writing. And I just never considered myself a writer. And then in 2007, I think it was 2000, I don't even know when it was actually, thereabouts, I actually wrote a book called The Beginner's Guide to Wealth with my dad, because I wanted to write a book to help young people. And he had written a whole heap of personal finance books, and he wanted to do something to help young people as well because of all the things like suicide rates and people just not having direction and self-worth and all those different things. So we wrote a book together called The Beginner's Guide to Wealth. It did very well in Australia, and we re-released it 5 years after that, and it was Money Magazine's Book of the Month, and we did a lot of radio and various other media things for that as well. So it was all the experience that I had with the self-help field and the personal development field. I just loved it, and he had loved it, and we really grew up on Napoleon Hill. And Think and Grow Rich was the book that changed his life when he was 33. And I was 33 when I met those filmmakers in Santa Monica. So it was a really
interesting
twist. Yeah. Yeah. But they just said, they said, we love your energy. Tell us how you can be involved in the project. And I basically gave them a a business plan and said, if I was you, this is what I would do, and pitch them a concept. And I said, whoever you could write the book should go and do this. And they said, can you do it? And I said, I'll knock it out of the park. And then that was it. But let me be very clear. I was not writing a substitute. And I never felt that I was, because it's like if someone says rewrite the Bible, you never would and you never could.
Right.
I was writing a modern companion to a book that had changed so many lives, sold more than 120 million copies, and still sells so well today. But it was written in 1937. So the opportunity to inspire people using people from today. And I think people just really love stories as well. So it really is a collection of short stories in there too.
So let's get into the meat and potatoes of it. For those people who've never heard of Think and Grow Rich, which I'm sure if you're listening to this show, you've definitely heard of it. But give us a quick, the cliff notes of what it is that you went and took from the original book that you really, gelled with, and that what your dad gelled with back in the day. And then what you took from that and said, okay, I'm going to go make my own standalone version that, again, is not trying to rewrite the Bible or rewrite the book. It's making a modern twist on it.
There are so many. I could answer that in about 6 months. There is a lot to it. And most people who read Think and Grow Rich do nothing with it, but it's the ones who sit there with a notepad and they don't read it like a novel. They read it like a textbook. And along the way, they think about, how can I apply this in my own life? And the very first principle is desire. So Napoleon Hill wrote that the starting point of all achievement is desire. And once you have that perfect destination of what success looks like for you in all areas of your life, it's so much easier for you to not only take those first, second, and third steps to achieve it, it also makes you much more resilient when adversity inevitably strikes. And in life, too many people accept temporary failure as permanent defeat. And all of the people in my book and all of the people in the original Think and Grow Rich who Napoleon Hill interviewed never accepted temporary failure as permanent defeat, whether it's a divorce, some type of financial hardship. In my book, there's a story of Janine Shepherd, who was literally hit by a truck, and she was a cross-country skier who had qualified for the Winter Olympics. And she said that the people, this whole team of doctors who had been working on her, when they told her that she could never walk again, from their completely qualified opinion, she said, no, that's not the case. I will walk again. And she did, despite still being classified as a paraplegic today and becoming a pilot. So that unwavering self-belief that the only opinion that really matters is how you feel about yourself, and making sure you surround yourself, the power of the mastermind, that you don't need to have all the answers yourself, that you can surround yourself with people who align with your values and your mission. And together you can move forward to help change the world.
That's incredible. That sort of sends shivers down your spine to think that you have so much desire, as you said, to go and just say, no, get effed, doctors. I'm going to go do, I know within myself, and the self-belief. I think that's so powerful that a lot of people don't ever get started to creating a life, whether it be through financing or investing, or just becoming financially free. And a lot of what we talk about on the show is becoming financially free through real estate and not having to be chained to the job, because we're so told all the time that we've got to do this, you've got to go to uni, you've got to get a job, and at 65 then you can enjoy life. And I think there's a real, and people, excuse my language, bitch and moan about millennials, but I think we are the generation that is shifting that mindset about how we look at life and how we take control, and not taking other people's words of advice and saying, screw that, like Janine Shepherd said, screw that, I'm going to go start walking again, I'm going to become a pilot, and really inspiring others. So I think there's a lot in obviously Think and Grow Rich that we could talk about for six hours on this show, but I really want to get into how you made it different and just some of the stories. Maybe talk around a bit about the business plan, about, you just mentioned before that you pitched them a business plan, said, if I was to do this book, I would do X, Y, Z. So tell us a little bit about that first question. And then let's get into your, who you went and interviewed, because it sounds like you interviewed some incredible, over 100 people to get the book online and up and running.
Well, yeah, there's a lot of people who I had the opportunity to interview, but to start off with the business plan, I basically said Well, people these days, they don't really want to go and read a textbook. We're in this digital age where visual content is key. And I thought, well, if you can't put visual content in a book, the next best thing is writing a story that feels like you're following a movie. So every one of these stories, it feels like a movie. So I thought, well, there's Napoleon Hill's achievement philosophy is 13 principles. Why don't you provide a brief overview of each principle in a modern context and then tell the stories of two or three people for each of those principles who were best able to personify that. And that's basically what it was. And I included a few examples in that pitch as well. And along the journey had the opportunity to interview people like Barbara Corcoran from Shark Tank. Amazing woman growing up in New Jersey and then making it big in the New York City property scene during some extremely difficult times in the 80s and 90s as a female as well. I think that is an extraordinary example. There are people like Grant Cardone and the property mogul who's worth almost $1 billion these days and has more than 4,000 properties in America alone. And people like Rob Dyrdek, who has like 7 TV shows and controls a whole heap of other things with his venture capital firm. And there are a lot of really interesting people along this journey, but a really important part of it as well is that you don't need to be on TV for your life to be a success. You don't need 1 million Instagram followers for your life to be a success. It is up to you to define success. But if you don't take that critical first step, then you're going to fall into someone else's plans and they're not going to have much plan for you. They're focused on their own lives. So I hear in the whole personal development field, I think where it gets a little bit confused is people hear that quote about the key to success is to take massive determined action. So they want to go and run a marathon on the first day or do a 200 kilo back squat on the first day, but you need to do the boring work. Create that literal wish list for the universe, a comprehensive idea of what success looks like for you, your unique definition of success, and make it so visible and so clear. I could hold mine up right here on this big A3 sheet of paper because I actually created that for people. It's available for free on my website, or they can email me and I will send it out to them. Because once you've got that, it's just, you will find, not to get too crazy with all this stuff, but you'll find that as you start living with purpose and intent as your authentic self, you will start to attract people into your life who align with your values and can help you get to where you want to be.
That's awesome. That's wow. What can I say, man? That's very, very inspiring. So many questions are coming to my head, but I do want to be very methodical about how we walk through this because I'm sure I'm an engineer, right? I studied civil engineering at UQ where you went. So I'm very much I get the special sauce. I picked up what you're putting down. I wouldn't be here if otherwise. And so I do want to get into, let's break it apart and let's put it back together again in terms of success and what that means. But just back on the book a little bit, like I think the number one thing I would ask is what's like, people ask me who's been your number one interview and I don't, and it's people that surprise me. Who was your number one interview for the book when you're creating it and what did you learn from them? Hey guys, I just want to take a second to share with you our latest multifamily investment opportunity, the Broadwater at Salado Creek, located in San Antonio, Texas, the market where we've got the most experience in. Now, rapid fire, here are the reasons why we love this deal. It's got fantastic investor returns. We are projecting around 20% annualized investor returns for those people who choose to invest in this deal. The second thing is that all the 176 units are in classic condition, which means we can come in, use our renovation program, and push rents even higher. Thirdly, is that multifamily pricing for properties have fallen more today than they did during the 2008 global financial crisis. This could very well be the best time in the commercial real estate cycle to pick up cheap deals. Now, if you're interested, click in the description or reach out to me directly at reed@rsnpropertygroup.com. Now, let's get back into the episode.
Janine Shepherd would be number one. As soon as I heard that, yeah, I thought that is it. I knew immediately that is story number one to be included in the book. And Janine's from Sydney in Australia, which is just, it was nice to have that Australian connection. And her and I are very close. We talk almost every day. Very close friend of mine. And she stays here when she comes to LA. And another one that really surprised, well, not really surprised me. I had a feeling this was going to be pretty good, but it was actually Jim Stovall. Have you heard of Jim Stovall?
No, before? I haven't. No.
So Jim Stovall, Stovall, for anyone who wants to look it up. At the age of 17, his dream was to play for the Dallas Cowboys in the NFL. And he basically failed a high school physical. They said that he had some issues with his eyesight. And three doctors sat him down and said, we're not sure how and we're not sure why, but we do know that within a few years, you're going to go totally and permanently blind and there's nothing that we can do about it.
Wow.
And think about that in your own life, because that is that metaphor of your entire life literally fading to black. And I think it would almost be better to not have seen the world in the first place and go blind once you know everything that you're missing. And it gives me shivers, and so does the Janine Shepherd story every time I even think about it. And what he's been able to do ever since, he actually was basically his friends and family gave him a pair of dark sunglasses and a white cane and confined him to a small room where he would be safe to see out his days. But Jim wasn't comfortable with someone else's reality of the life, the destiny that he was supposed to have. And of course, like Janine, they had years, like literally years of really like second guessing everything that happens in your life and who you are and why has this happened to me and being depressed and miserable. But Jim was able to get out of his comfort zone. And I use the example of Jim and Janine at each of my speeches when I talk about different things like embracing the struggle and getting out of your comfort zone. And he was able to be the founder of the Narrative Television Network because he realized that blind and visually impaired people, they can't enjoy media. They can't enjoy videos and TV shows and movies like everyone else can. So he created it. And the Narrative Television Network is now in more than a dozen countries around the world. And he also became the author of 30 best-selling books.
Wow.
And he hadn't written a single book before he was blind. So now when people tell me, they're like, I want to write a book, but I just don't think I can. Well, you're barking up the wrong tree. You can do whatever you want, but
right.
You just need to come up with the right plan and surround yourself with the right people.
That's, wow. Wow, I can't even imagine going blind. And I was just thinking about it. Would I rather have seen something and then go blind or to not have seen it all? And I think the answer is I would have rather have seen it, because then you at least know, right? Because you can know what green, imagine trying to describe to a blind person the color blue if they've never seen blue. Like how do you, you can't describe any color, right? It always blows my mind in that sort of just, you stop and think and you stare at an object for too long. It sort of freaks you out a little bit. You're like, why is a blender a blender? You know?
and better to have loved and lost as they say as well.
Exactly, exactly. But mate, it just sounds like an incredible book on just different people. So you compiled these 100 interviews. Was it 100 interviews you did, or how many interviews did you do?
So the 100 interviews are, or more than that I have done for various projects over the years as well. But I interviewed about 30 people for this project. So
right.
There's a lot of interesting stories, but there's also references to a lot of modern day people in here as well, like Mark Zuckerberg and Roger Federer and Oprah Winfrey and the ethos of the Navy SEALs and just a whole heap of modern things to get people really excited. I figure if they're inspired to take action, and then there's enough clues along the way, there's a blueprint, there's people from basically every industry that you can think of in seven or eight different countries in this book, there is definitely a pathway for your own life that you will be inspired to create after reading all of these stories.
So brings up a really good segue into the sort of, again, let's take it apart and put it back together again. I get the high level stuff. Everyone wants to be successful and it's great that we can go and talk about it. But what are these people doing every single day? Or what were sort of some of the trends you saw through interviewing all these people that you said, okay, that these are the top five things these successful people are doing. And regardless whether they're an athlete or a, you know, good in financing or, you know, business owner or, you know, the gentleman who started that TV network, could you boil it down to sort of a handful of items that people are doing every single day so people listening to this show can say, okay, I need to start implementing that and this and that so I can be successful or get on the track towards being a successful person?
It is the same formula irrespective of what industry or what discipline you're in. So all of these people are very, very clear about their values and what their version of a gold medal looks like. For some of them, it is a literal gold medal at the Olympics, but for other people, they've got these big ideas to be a billionaire or they're very, very specific about what their future self is going to be. So in their head, it has already happened. And that means it's basically they're on autopilot to be in an infinite well of energy every single day as they take those actions that are eventually going to get them there. It's taking simple and consistent action every single day. And that's so boring to sell for a lot of people, but it's just easy today for people to get distracted and procrastinate, but get excited about taking the simple and consistent action and being grateful for where you are, knowing that each of these actions that you're taking along the way, these seemingly small actions, are going to add up. So one day you'll just have these amazing things that can just happen. There was even a moment for me writing this book where I just felt like I'd done so much work and I was about ready for something to happen. And then I saw that I saw my phone start to blow up out in the other room. And Rob Dyrdek had posted on his Instagram stories to his 4 million followers about how much he loved the book. And that was that never would have happened without all those other little things that had happened before. So getting excited about the simple and consistent action, never accepting temporary failure as permanent defeat. That is about as big as it gets. And it's easy to say, but it's very, very difficult to do. But you need to find the gift in acceptance. What is the gift in every single thing? Because the moment that you can find a way to convert that adversity to an equal or greater benefit, which is exactly what happened to Jim Stovall and Janine Shepherd, then that puts you on a whole other journey. Because once you have that gift of acceptance, you can let go of what you thought it was the case. Because often in times we have things in life that are completely outside of our control, like being blind or being hit by a truck. How are you going to respond to that when it happens? So embracing the struggle. And another really important point as well is just surrounding yourself with the right people. People who can have you thinking 100 times bigger than you ever thought you could. People who can amplify your journey to success a lot more efficiently and effectively. And that has been by far the most profound impact on my entire life. Whether it was back home in Australia or here in particular in America, I've always, through the process of increasingly becoming a person of value, so always working on myself, enabling me to add more and more value to people. That means when opportunities actually happened, I was given more opportunities and I was in a position to accept those opportunities and be ready for those opportunities that I otherwise wouldn't have been afforded if I hadn't done all the little things in the lead up. And when you unconditionally give enough value to other people, you'll find that the universe just gives you so much back. And often it's in ways that you wouldn't expect, but in different ways. So I'm a huge believer in the law of karma.
That's law, mate. Wow, that's really incredible, because you've summarized some five things we speak a lot about on this show. You know, my purpose of this show is to educate people about real estate investing to be financially free. But there's so many other things in life that you can be successful about. And that's probably the next question I want to get into, is what is success? Like, I know we probably should have asked it at the beginning, but like, it's so different to everyone else. And I guess the better question is, what's the end goal for the book for you to have an impact on people's lives, whether it just be the average Joe at a job or trying to inspire the next, Tim Ferriss? What's sort of the goal for you when you're giving these stories into the book and boiling it down for people?
I want to wake people up to realize that they can do whatever they want. So you don't need to be going to work for someone else, because the average person, they wakes up and they complain when their alarm goes off, and then they complain about it being too cold, and then they hop in their car and complain about the traffic, and then they get to work and complain about their boss and the work they have to do. Then they drive home and they complain about the traffic again, and then they bitch to their partner about what a horrible day they had. But there's a much better way. You can wake up and use something like the 5-minute journal, which is a great resource where you write down three things that you're grateful for, three things that would make today a win, and you do your life's work first before you roll into someone else's agenda for your day. And once people realize that that can actually happen for them, then it's almost like they're removing this mask, this layer of stress and fake. They're living someone else's life. And then finally, for the first time, they can be authentic and free. And on the condition that they can package that in the right way, they can make a great living, a much better living in many cases than they could have done working for someone else. But I think success to me is the freedom to live each day how you want, the financial freedom to have enough money to contribute to the causes and the people that you care about. And it's also through your actions, pursuing your potential always so that you might inspire others to do the same. Because it can be very difficult to grab someone by the neck and say, hey, it's time for you now to be a success. It's only when they're really ready for it. But through your own actions, that really is the best way to inspire other people. And I hope that through this book and the film that people are motivated to do that.
No, I think they will be, mate. I think it's incredible. And the art of journaling and just personally how much that has changed my life in the probably last 18 months to 2 years that I've been doing it, getting the clutter out of your head. Like it's, I think of my head sometimes as one of those old man drawers with just clutter in it, just, you know, the batteries and all. Oh, this cord can be used for something else in the future and like a couple of menus for the, you know, but you've got to get it out of your head and on the paper. So it's sort of like in mind form into a to-do list and for the week ahead and what are my goals for that week. And I write down my future goals, but very much being but being specific with the goals. And just something that you said before, and I don't know if it's inherent to Australians, but I know growing up, I was always told the world is my oyster. I just got to go out and figure out how, you know, what I need to do. And you said something earlier in the piece that a lot of these people had just envisaged that they're already there. And it's sort of like, it's autopilot, just getting from where I am now to point A to point B. And I think that, I don't know if it's Aussies, if you think that's the same, but I think a lot of Australians are, you know, from who I meet are very high-functioning people, and I'm not trying to say just Australians, but we're bred to have this sort of get out and go get it sort of, you know, everyone goes and travels, everyone goes and, you know, we just finished uni, see you later, we're going to go, you know, throw caution to the wind and we'll figure out what happens next. Where you talk to Americans, you know, I tell a lot of Americans how I got here, and they're like, you did what? You quit your job and you didn't have a job and you're walking on the streets in New York trying to find an engineering job with a portfolio. Like, you're crazy. He's like, yeah, but it took one yes, and that one yes changed my life, right? So that's all that needed to happen in order to change my life, and I'd figure the next stuff out, you know, as it came. But any comment on that?
Yeah, I was going to say, you're right. About the only issue that I have with the Australian culture is we do have that opportunity mindset. But we do have that tall poppy syndrome as well, where people are happy to see you do well, but not much better than they are. And that was one of the biggest motivators for me to actually get away from there. And now when I go back to Australia, and I've still got a lot of people who I'm very, very close with, close friends who I've known for 25 years out there as well. But when I go back, I also catch up. There's a very high concentration of people who are exactly like you and I, where integrity is such a big part of it, but we just want to help each other succeed. Mm-hmm. And we know that if there's anything that either of us can do to help that other person, then we will do it. Mm-hmm. And don't have to worry about any bitching or anything else. And once you reach a certain point, you are a little bit desensitized to that. And you know that people will, people will say what they want to say.
Hate is hate, right?
Yeah, that's right. And I'm not stopping. And I know that you're not stopping. So if people want to start talking, they're going to, I hope they're just warming up to start talking as well, because there are plenty other big things coming.
No, you hit a nail on the head there. Just, you know, you're right. Australians are get up and go get it, get up and go get ya sort of attitude. But we do have, our culture is very much tall poppy syndrome. You know, as you said, don't get too successful. But here in the States, this is why I love the United States and why you moved here, why we moved here, is that it's sort of people want to know more, right? Like, I sometimes don't talk about my real estate when I go home because I just keep it under wraps, because it just, like, people are probably sick of it. They see me podcasting, they see me blogging, blah, blah, blah. And I can just be like, you know, just keep your successes to yourself, so to speak. But here in the States, they're like, you've done what? Like, how do I do that? I'm taking notes. Like, well done. Like, they're sort of boosting you up a little bit, which is, again, there's different elements of each culture that I love, and sort of why, you know, I love coming to the United States and living here and just being successful, because you're supported by so many people who want to live and be and breathe what we've done. Yet on the Australian side, it's a little bit just sort of like, oh, well done, pat on the back. All right, what's for dinner? You know, sort of thing. You know, sort of get through the conversation a little bit quickly, if that makes sense.
That's right. And think about that dinner that we had a couple of months back. Like, there's what, 20, 25 people in that one room, where as soon as you walk in, there is an instant degree of trust that you have to be your authentic self and share your dreams, and you know that other people are going to do the same. So I think just putting yourself in a position where you have more and more of those things, God, it just opens things up, and just doing the right thing by people, it's almost like a miracle cure. Like, it is, It is amazing. Sometimes it can take longer than you think, but there are just a lot of things happening right now and some new projects and things that I've, you know, I had a big call yesterday with some, not anything that I can talk about right now, but on the back of just doing the right thing for people for years and making sure they're well looked after. So, yeah, and the more you do that, the more you just start to attract similar people. But if you give too much attention to people who have negative energy or don't have your best interests at heart, then it's a horrible formula for your own happiness.
I saw that one quote the other day, a ship doesn't sink because of the water around it. A ship sinks when that water gets inside. And it's sort of like life. You if you let it get inside you, you're going to sink. But if you just keep plowing through the water or through whatever it might be, the adversities, negativity, just the daily day-to-day grind, you know, and some of the steps you outlined before, surround yourself with five different new people. If you're the best person in your group of five, then you need to change, you know, the people you hang out with, right? You're the average of the five people you hang around with. If people are negative in who you hang around with and you're taking that water on board, find five new people to hang around with because you are the average of the five people. And I think that's was so important. But I want to ask one question. If someone meets you on the street, James, and you had to tell them what you did in a pitch, what do you tell them?
It's my elevator pitch has always been a work in progress. It's been a lot easier later. Basically, my mission is to help people take ownership of their financial, physical, and mental health. That's what I most love to do. But when I had many businesses and various other pursuits, it was very hard to condense into the one concise elevator pitch. But that's my mission right now. And it actually was essentially revealed to me when I was working on this Think and Grow Rich project. It was like the clouds parted for the first time in my life. And I thought, wow, that's my purpose. Here I am. And this is what I want to do. And this is what I will do for the rest of my life is just, you know, when you, as Steve Jobs says, you can only connect the dots looking back. And I realized that everything that I'd done in my life, good and bad, was getting me to this point where it was like, finally, you have been through enough adversity. You know enough. Now is your chance to help inspire other people.
That's awesome, mate. If you could look back at yourself at 18 now, what's the number one piece of advice you'd give to either your 18-year-old self or someone who's in a bit of a situation right now that you can sum up in one sentence? What would that be?
Probably each day, make the decision to win or you've automatically made the decision to lose. And that is a slide that I put up at every single speech I do. And most people don't realize the importance of habits, especially at that age. The earlier that you can develop these habits and seek out people who can give you enough exposure to different businesses, and industries, companies, and a whole heap of different things to... That is the way that you find your purpose. And waking up and being committed and living with intent is just the easiest way to make that clouds parting moment that I mentioned earlier, to make that happen. So just remembering that each day, it's human nature. We will revert to doing what is easy, procrastinating and being distracted. So if you're very, very clear on who you are and what you want to do every single day, make that intent, then nothing can stop you. And the earlier you make that decision, the better.
That's incredible. Making every day a desire to win, otherwise you've just lost, right? And I think getting up with that mindset every single day, journaling, surrounding yourself with different people who will make you successful. I think that's incredible. Mate, I do want to be respectful of your time. At the end of every show, I like to ask my guests to give me their top five investing tips. You ready to get into it?
Yeah, let's do it.
Mate, what is the daily habit you practice to keep on track towards your goals? We pretty much talked about the whole show, but what's your number one?
The 5-minute journal. It's an amazing resource. Go and check it out. The 5-minute journal. It's highly, highly recommended because those three things that you write down nag away at you until you do it. So highly, highly recommended. It's the book I give away the most too.
I'm sure you're giving away a few copies of that, mate. Who's the most influential person in your career? We may have already mentioned him.
Yeah, I'd say probably my dad, but equal parts my mum as well. She comes from the empathy side as well. So she's just an extremely compassionate woman, the type of person who'd, if someone cut her off in traffic and gave her the finger, she'd probably wave just because she hopes that with that wave, it would make the other person have a kinder and feel better about themselves. So yeah, I would say my parents.
That's awesome. That's really awesome. What is the most influential tool, whether it be software or hardware related, in your business?
Oh, it's a good question. And it's something that probably sounds weird, but again, that 5-minute journal is something that is so clear with me because it just gives me the freedom and the focus to do what I need to do. And I don't really have a huge amount of actual tools. I do a lot of work on my phone. So even something as simple as a notes app, is something that if I'm on the go and I have a bit of a lightning bolt of inspiration, I can grab my phone and just go crazy writing down things on that. So probably either the notes app or my phone. It's just, it makes it so much easier in the digital age, especially if you're feeling flat and wherever you are, you can just grab your phone and still be productive.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Mate, we've talked a little about success on this podcast today, and we talk a lot about success on the show in general. But what's the biggest failure that you've faced in your career to date? And what did you learn from that failure?
Probably the biggest failure. This is what I wrote about for Success Magazine, this piece that's going to be in their March issue next year. And that was really for the first 23 years of my life. I was letting life happen to me rather than going after it. And I had a whole heap of soul searching and really bad things that happened and all this stuff is perspective, right? Whether you're hit by a truck or blind or whatever happens in your life, we've all had adversities and hard things that we had gone through. And I had some really debilitating battles with anxiety, which I write about at length for the first time in this piece. And it was only when I made the decision out of sheer disgust that I would never live like that again. And it was a simple conversation with my mum of all people who I would never, I think it was because she was there, where she basically told me that I am much stronger than I possibly know. And I have everything I need to succeed right here and right here, pointing at my head and my heart. That is when it just completely, from that moment, it was like I planted a flag at life and said, basically, here I am and nothing is going to stop me. So from that moment, I sort of feel like I basically started my life at that point and really think about those first 23 years. And I just feel like it was a waste of potential. And I hate to see someone else doing the exact same thing.
Mate, sends goosebumps. It's pretty deep, mate. And it sounds like you've got an incredible relationship with your parents, but also hitting something on the head that a lot of people do suffer with, which is anxiety. I do personally. A lot of people I know suffer with anxiety. Forms of it, not debilitating forms of anxiety, but people do suffer with it, and it's something that's real, and you've got to address it. And doing little things like journaling and meditation and all that sort of stuff is really, really awesome. Mate, last question. Where can people reach you to continue the conversation? They want to get their hands on your book. They want to be in your sphere a little bit more. Where do they go?
If you go to jameswhit.com, so that's Whit with two T's, W-H-I-T-T. It's James Whit on Instagram and jameswhit.com. And I think James Whit on Facebook as well. So reach out and let me know if I can ever be of service.
Well, mate, I want to thank you so much for jumping on the show today. You provided some just incredible, nuggets of absolute gold. I quickly just want to rehash some of the things that I took away from today. And I think, the top five things, being very clear about the values and setting that gold medal for yourself in life. Otherwise, if you're not being very clear with it, it's hard to really understand what your desire is. And you've got to really understand, people listening to the show have got to understand what their desire is in order to move forward. The simple and consistent action taking every single day. And it might be, I know myself, it's just small action items that I know that if I'm going to get to a goal in 5 years' time, I've got to set up the stepping stones to get towards that goal. So what are you doing every day? Never accepting temporary failure as long-term failure. I think that was hugely powerful. And get back up on the horse if you fall off. It's going to happen, and just accept it. And then always, being able to accomplish being accomplished in your own self, or being satisfied with your own who you are, and being okay with the journey that you've come through and the adversity or whatever it might be, and understanding that you can easily shed that and change your life, and as you said, put that flag in life and start moving forward, and not just letting your life take happen, actually taking control of it. So did I leave anything out?
No, that was good. Good summary. You were listening.
Mate, I've got 2 pages of notes here. Well, mate, as again, thank you so much for dropping on the show today. Enjoy the rest of your week and we'll catch up soon.
My pleasure, mate. Sounds great.
Well, there you have it. Another cracking episode jam-packed with some incredible advice. Please get over to James's website at jameswhitt.com. That's W-H-I-T-T to check him out and be in his sphere. All the show notes from today's show will be up on my website at reedgoosens.com. And I want to thank you for taking some time out of your day to tune in to continue to grow your financial IQ. Even though we didn't do much financial IQ today, we did more of soul-searching IQ, which I think is really, really important as we step towards success. We're going to do this all again next week. So take care. Be safe. And remember, happy investing.